Currently, there are only 14 states in the U.S. that run a retail electric utility market, meaning they allow consumers to choose from whom they want to buy their power. But next week, Nevada could become the 15th state if voters pass a ballot initiative known as Question 3. Supporters say the move would create competition that could drive prices down and bolster innovation. Opponents say the uncertainty of a deregulated market could wreak havoc on the state. KUNR's Paul Boger spoke with Riley Snyder, a reporter who covers energy policy for the Nevada Independent, to break down the question and what it can mean for the Silver State.
We're talking a little bit about Question 3. It's this big overall plan to deregulate in the state's energy market. I wonder if you kind of can explain that as best you can.
Sure. So Question 3, in a nutshell, is an attempt to amend Nevada's constitution to basically totally change how energy works in Nevada. Right now, as probably all your listeners know, you get your electricity from NV Energy. You only have one provider. You send them your bill. They send you the bill every month. You pay them every month. It's a monopoly model. They control the generation. So the power plants and the contracts they have with power plants, they control the transmission, all the power lines, and they control the retail sale. So they're the people you interact with on the customer level. What Question 3 is trying to do is to amend, again, the state's constitution to open parts of that electric market to additional companies, private companies, and to specifically prohibit a monopoly in the electric market. What that means for most people outside of energy nerds like me, who care about like all three aspects of the market and where all the power comes from, is that instead of just having NV Energy, like if you move into a new house or a new apartment, you sign up through their website and they're kind of your only provider, what would likely happen is that the state would set up a website. There's one in Texas called powertochoose.org where you can search for electric plans, where you can say, I want to get 100% renewable energy and search for plans that do that. Or you can say, I want to find the cheapest rates, or I want to find deals that let me have free electricity on weekends, but then my rates might go up when there's a higher demand overall in the market. So it's sort of a large wholesale change to the state's electric market that's being proposed. It's been funded almost entirely by the Las Vegas Sands and Switch. And this sort of gets into this battle over this ballot question, is this fight between NV Energy and companies like Las Vegas Sands and Switch, who feel like they're getting charged too much for electricity and have applied to leave their service territory. But passage of Question 3 would be kind of a roundabout way for these companies to exit NV Energy and buy electricity on the open market, because now everyone would be on the open market. So those two companies have poured millions of dollars into the ballot question. They did it in 2016. They've done it again this cycle. NV Energy, which was neutral on the ballot question last cycle, has spent just a ridiculous amount of money. It's going to be one of the most, like, easily top five most expensive races in state history. They put $63 million towards it, which I just want to stress, like, that is unheard of for ballot questions in Nevada. Nothing ever gets to that level. And so the amount of money they've put has dwarfed the amount of money that the Pro Question 3 side has put up, and almost candidates for governor, candidates for Senate, none of them have raised or put together that much money just for one question on the ballot. So it's kind of turned into a fight between those two competing sides. The pro side has really stressed that states with markets like this, there's something like 14 of them who have, you call it deregulated, they don't like that term, they call it restructured or a retail market. I looked at the electric rates for those states, and they have decreased at a greater level than quote-unquote monopoly states have over the past decade. However, their rates, to begin with, were higher than those in monopoly states and remain higher than those in monopoly states. But their argument is that rather than the current rate-making process, we can use competitive forces in the market to drive down prices and to lower electric bills. That's kind of the selling point for proponents of this, as well as having the right to buy your electric provider. If you don't like NV Energy today, you can't leave them. They are your electric provider. There's nothing else you can do if you have a bad experience with them in customer service or something like that. So this would give you the ability to pick and choose electric providers that enter the marketplace. The opponents have brought up a lot of the what they call uncertainties with this. It is a constitutional amendment, so if the state decided 2 or 3 years down the line they wanted to undo it, they would have to go through the similar process where they would have to get a removal of the language that's already in the Constitution removed in 2 subsequent elections, so it would be a very difficult process to undo it. It has a 5-year implementation date, and the amendment itself is about 300 words. I think it's like 286 words. So there's a lot of like leeway that's placed in the hands of the legislature, which only meets once every 2 years. So it puts a big responsibility on them to try and get it right. Other states have had issues with sort of like fly-by-night marketers who come in and promise really good electric rates and then go out of business. So how do you ensure people have reliable electric coverage? Opponents have also brought up what happened in California, although it should be said the energy climate nationally is very different than what it was in the late 1990s. But, you know, people still remember, for very good reasons, the rolling blackouts and brownouts that happened to California in the late 1990s when they tried to do something similar. It's a little difficult. I like doing fact checks for the Nevada Independent, and a lot of this is like, well, this could happen and this might happen. So it's hard to ascertain whether or not those things are actually going to happen, because there is a lot of leeway, again, up to the legislature. But those are probably the main the pros and cons that have been brought up so far.
One of the more interesting things about this particular initiative, I find, is that it has very much fallen along party lines, at least at this point in the election, with Democrats offering strong opposition, Republicans offering support for it. You know, what do you make of that?
Yeah, so it's been sort of a weird political battle. As people might remember, in 2016, one of the biggest proponents of this is former U.S. Senator Harry Reid. And now, 2 years later, you'd be hard-pressed to find a Democrat in the state who supports it. There's been a lot of opposition to this, both in 2016 and this cycle, from labor unions, as there are 2 IBEW chapters who would be affected by NV Energy no longer being a monopoly. They would lose a lot of jobs, and so the labor community, sort of writ large, has come out in opposition to this. And NV Energy has a lot of political power, as you can imagine. It's sort of the same in any state with a monopoly utility, but they write big campaign checks. They have a lot of friends, a lot of lobbyists in the legislature. One of the recent stories I did was on Governor Brian Sandoval, who in 2017 said he had voted for the initiative in 2016 and planned to do it again in 2018. A few months later, I asked him the same question, and he said he had moved from a yes to an undecided. And I recently submitted a records request and received his calendar from 2018. And about 2 weeks before he had said he moved to undecided, he had met with NV Energy's CEO and one of their top lobbyists, who is also one of his like college friends. So it's a company that has like deep roots and tentacles into the state. So it's not surprising to see more opposition this cycle. And then I guess on the pro side, if we want to get into that, Switch has been sort of, I guess, neutral. Their CEO likes to call them Switzerland, because they try to have friends on both sides in terms of political power. But as your listeners probably know, the Las Vegas Sands is run by Sheldon Adelson, who's one of the largest donor to super PACs and one of the largest conservative Republican donors in the country. And he's helped fund the campaigns of Adam Laxalt, who's running for governor, many other Republican candidates in the state. So, you know, I don't know if it's too surprising that Republicans are sort of lining up behind the initiative, given that he's very strongly supporting it.
There's also been this concern, at least in northern Nevada, and especially in the rurals, that question three will kind of work along the same lines as the state's health insurance exchange, and that there will be a number of offerings, a number of businesses that move into Las Vegas and southern Nevada, but that northern Nevada and the rurals will be stuck with whoever decides to stay, if anybody comes into the state. Is that actually a valid concern?
So one of the funny things with this ballot initiative is that the people out in the rurals who are served by electric cooperatives are really strongly opposed to question three, and yet are going to vote for Adam Laxalt and Dean Heller and other Republicans who said they support the ballot initiative in overwhelming droves. But their concern is that by introducing competition into the electric market, you're going to mess with the business model and structure for these rural electric cooperatives, who oftentimes are put in place just because a normal business isn't going to serve like the Elys or the Elcos of the world, just because there aren't that many customers. Their concern, again, is brought by the fact this is a constitutional amendment, so the legislature can't, you know, pass a law saying, all right, this only affects Vegas and Reno, and the rurals are kept out of it. Under the constitutional amendment, you, me, and everyone else in the state will have a right to purchase electricity from a provider of our choice. What that means and what that pretends has yet to be determined, but for a lot of folks in the rurals, that scares them, because they do like their cooperative model. They like the service they get from that. They're afraid that big energy consumers out in the rurals, whether it's mines, whether it's agriculture, will be swooped up by outside providers, and they'll be sort of left high and dry. That's a concern. I don't know if it's going to happen, but that has certainly been a concern from a lot of rural areas. And you've seen in multiple rural counties, the county commissioners passing resolutions opposing the ballot question, which I think speaks to their very strong concerns about the initiative.
There's also this question of more renewable energy, more green energy development in the state. We also have question six, which is the RPS initiative, looking to essentially mandate that the state get 50% of its energy by 2030 from renewable sources. There is a concern that question three will at least in part affect that mandate. You know, how is that going to shake out?
Sure. So both the pro and con sides of question three like to bring up renewable energy, but the dirty little secret is that nothing about electric market structure really affects renewable energy production. The pro side says if you want to get 100% renewable electricity, you can. They point to examples in like Pennsylvania, where there's been more wind development after they went to a restructured market. But I think in a state like Nevada that already has a pretty substantial renewable portfolio that it pretends to increase over the next couple of years, how the market is sort of structured isn't going to have a lot to do with it. The Gwynn Center put out a report earlier this year where they said there was no correlation between electric market structure and the amount of renewables that a state uses. There has been some concern from proponents of question three that locking in a higher renewable portfolio standard, which question six would limit the businesses that want to come in to Nevada to do business. If you want to get your energy at the cheapest price, no matter where the fuel comes from, having a higher renewable standard could affect the price or could affect your flexibility as a business. They've brought that up as a potential sort of limitation on the market structure if the initiative passes. But again, there's nothing that directly correlates between market structure and increased or decreased renewable use.
So ultimately, at the end of the day, you know, talking to you and looking at the research, it kind of seems that no one really knows how the market will shake out unless the state does pass this, right?
So it's hard to say, right? Because 14 other states have done this. So proponents say, like, look, we have 14 blueprints of how to do this. We can avoid what they did wrong. We can take what they did right and run with that. The other side of that coin is that no state has done this by constitutional amendment. No state has done this since the early 2000s and late 1990s. No state has done it this far west. The westernmost state to move to a restructured market is Texas, and Texas is very different than Nevada. They have oil reserves. They have a lot of wind. We have solar, but most of our current fuel mix that NV Energy uses comes from natural gas. So there's no like direct comparison to Nevada. So there are some questions as to whether or not there's any analogous examples of other states that we could directly point to. We tried to do this in the 1990s and eventually backed away over the concerns with California. So I think if the measure does passes, you're going to see a lot of lobbying, a lot of last-minute deals at the legislature. You're going to see a lot of folks who put together the electric markets in other states come to the legislature. Part of the other issue as well is that a lot of legislators don't know about energy policy that well. They're attorneys or they're teachers, and they're kind of having to pick it up as they go along, which is a little concerning if you're, you know, trying to literally, you know, take down one structure and build up another one. one of the things I think that might get lost in this talk, because, you know, talk of electric structures is sort of on a macro level and sort of boring, is that everyone needs electricity. Everyone pays their power bill. Everyone needs electricity to live. If you have a medical condition that you need electricity on for whatever device you have, that's literally a life or death thing. And this is something that will affect the pocketbooks of every man, woman, and child that lives in Nevada if energy rates go up or down. So while a lot of the discussion is over structure and sort of these macro things that are hard to get around, for me, at least, and what I've tried to report on, is that you will be affected, I will be affected, everyone in Nevada is going to be affected in some way or another on the outcome of this ballot measure.
That was KUNR's Paul Boger speaking with Riley Snyder with the Nevada Independent. You can find all of our election coverage at KUNR.org.